It is really now summer, and things are getting more relaxed, except in some areas. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy, and along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Yeah, summertime and the living is easy, and unless you live in a large city.
There is still something like that going on.
Or if you're a NASCAR driver.
Okay, you know what? I was wondering if we were going to broach this subject early or later. I knew we weren't going to get to it, but let's put this out here right now, okay? It has now been learned. We're recording this on Wednesday, so by the time you hear this on Saturday, everybody will have completely fleshed this one out. But it has just been learned, I think yesterday, that after an investigation, including the FBI and track officials, the FBI, NASCAR officials, I believe the state, Alabama State Police, and others, it has come to find out, if you're a NASCAR fan, you like auto racing, that the Talladega race was this weekend. It was actually held on Monday because I think
rain
on Sunday.
Rain, yeah.
So they were holding it on Monday. But, well, between Sunday night and Monday, there was a little issue that had come up. Well, it's actually a pretty big issue in the light of the environment that we're in right now in this nation, Chuck. And that was that a NASCAR driver by the name of Bubba Wallace. Now, Chuck, I know people can sometimes stereotype.
Right.
Most of the time when somebody hears NASCAR and Bubba and the name of Bubba,
yeah,
they're going to be thinking of a very deep South white driver. Probably a redneck or
big belly.
Maybe not.
T-shirt.
No, you see, because Bubba Wallace, the professional NASCAR driver, happens to be African American, and he's a younger guy on the circuit, and he's coming up, and he's with the Richard Petty Racing Organization, and I think most people recognize the name Richard Petty, whether you watch NASCAR or not.
Yeah,
he's pretty much a legend in the realm of auto racing and cross platforming. And so the Petty organization had Bubba Wallace as one of their drivers because they usually end up sponsoring or backing four or five drivers who drive cars that basically show their organization's colors. Like with Petty, it's red and blue,
right,
and a little bit of orange in a certain pattern like he used to drive on his car.
Well, his number was 43.
43, that's right. And so, so Bubba Wallace is driving for Petty, and of course, they get down to Talladega to do this and have this race, and then they were getting ready for everything, and all of a sudden of course the race gets rain delayed, and then all of a sudden this situation pops up, Chuck, where Bubba Wallace, this African-American driver, claims that someone went into the garage area of the professional drivers, which is not open to the public. It is not accessible through the general public's areas of accessibility.
It's special invite only,
and frankly, you have to actually be on the team, on the pit crew, on the racing team, the owners, or somebody in order to get into this garage. That someone had gotten into that garage and had left a noose in his garage area. Well, that's pretty scary.
It's an aggressive, it's meaningless, really, but it's aggressive as anything. I mean, if you think about it, it's sort of saying, I'm in your face. I know who you are, and this is a subtle threat.
And just remember where we are, okay?
Alabama.
So basically, we're in Alabama. Not a bastion of what you would consider a progressive, race-neutral area for most people's thinking. George Wallace, there's an awful lot of history regarding what we call systemic racism coming out of Alabama with some of their history. and including the Civil War and the Confederacy. And I mean, we can go on and on and on. You know, just remember, this is the same NASCAR that had banned the display, possession, or selling of the Confederate battle flag at NASCAR events, especially the ones that, well, most NASCAR events are in the South, but especially the ones that are in states like Alabama. Now, I had heard, and this is kind of a little side note, I had heard that there were a number who were parking RVs and things off track, off site, and selling the Confederate battle flags.
Yeah, they were selling the flags
while they were there. Now, I don't think you were allowed to bring them in, though, to the track as a spectator. But because they're checking that. But somehow, somebody managed to go not just in the general public areas, but into the private garages of one of the professional teams and leave a noose. And, of course, we all know that what the noose symbolizes for those who have that kind of thinking is the idea of stringing up someone because of their skin color.
Lynching.
Okay? Yeah. And it's a big, bad thing. And it's heinous. And, of course, NASCAR responded immediately that they were going to investigate. And when they found the person who was responsible for it, that they would take action, which usually would mean that they would probably have them arrested. And if they were like a crew member, pit crew chief, you know, somebody involved with one of the racing teams, they would probably sanction the team and, you know, have this person fired and arrested. Well, they called in all of this law enforcement, like I talked to you about, including the FBI.
15 FBI agents.
15 different FBI agents who went through and they did a scour of the entire facility. And they issued their findings just late yesterday. Chuck, what they found out was this noose, this piece of rope, wasn't just in Bubba Wallace's garage.
Right.
Matter of fact, when they got to looking at it, they realized that this particular type of noose was in many, if not all, of the garage areas for all of the teams, white or black. Why? Was it that somebody got in there and they wanted to send a message to NASCAR that they were upset about them, quote-unquote, you know, maybe capitulating to the whole racial, you know, public shaming thing that was going on with the Confederate battle flag? No, wasn't that. Was it that somebody wanted to allay suspicion by putting these nooses in everybody's garages, but it was really still a message toward Bubba Wallace because he's black? Nope, wasn't that, according to the FBI. What was it, according to the FBI?
Oh, it was a door pull.
It was a garage door pull rope.
Yeah,
that's in every one of the garage areas. And it's a rope. It has a loop in it where you put the loop over the door handle and then you pull the door down.
Yeah, essentially it's to make it easier to get the door
make
up and down.
Make it easier to get the door up and down and not burn, not have it like on a pulley system, rope pulley system, where you have to like go hand over hand in order to get it done. Because they need speed. I mean, one of their big areas is they need speed. Like when somebody comes pulls into the pit in the garage area, they need to be able to get in and out of that garage with whatever parts, equipment, the gas, the tank of fuel to put in the car, whatever they need that isn't right up there on the wall in pit row. They have to be able to get to it fast. And, of course, they can't just sit there and leave the garage doors open because each one of these teams has, like, certain things that they do with their cars and certain equipment that they have that they don't want the other teams getting wind of and thus losing a possible competitive advantage within the rules. So they keep those garage doors usually closed, but they have to get into that garage when action's hot.
Well, that noose, that loop of rope.
That garage door pull.
That garage door pull, the loop of rope. And you can find a picture of it online. There are pictures of it. And there are pictures, if you go back and look, that are dated November of 2019.
Because they've been around for a while.
That was put in there. That loop of rope was put in there after the a Talladega qualifier in October of 2019.
Yep.
By a guy named Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney just put somebody on the crew, not him, somebody on the crew said, hey, it would be easier to pull this door down if we had a loop in it.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever had to, you know, we all have garage door openers these days. I didn't have one in here in this place, and that's a 10-foot door. So we had a loop in the rope because it's easy to grab as a handhold to get the door down. So it's not a noose. It's a loop. And so this narrative basically, we can question the reasons why this happened, but there are major reasons why a lot of people came out immediately,
mm-hmm.
especially on the conservative side. Now, I'll be quite honest, said, right. nope, this can't be. These are people who know NASCAR.
Well, there are a lot of reasons for that.
There's a whole bunch.
Go ahead and say what your reasons are.
Well, the reasons are these things are so heavily surveilled. Cameras everywhere.
True.
You could not have gotten in a garage and tied that loop without being on camera.
And also being part of that team's crew because... Yeah. That's part of what they're looking for is to make sure that teams don't go and sabotage each other or
yes, that's why
or get competitive, take away a competitive advantage by going in and doing espionage or spying on the other team and what they're doing to their car. So that's a big issue. But there's an even bigger issue, too. Okay, now, first of all, the immediate response from NASCAR, bravo to them. They're going to investigate and they're going to get down to the bottom of it and they were going to punish whoever was responsible for this. Okay, and then what happened was, if anybody paid attention during the day, what was happening before the race was that all the NASCAR drivers that were going to be in the race got together and they had a unity.
Yeah, gathering. Unity meeting. Yeah, that's
and they pushed Bubba Wallace's car to the front of the pack, giving him pole position. Okay, not sure that was necessary, but you know, it's a symbolic gesture at the very least.
If this had been a real thing, it's just a showing of big-hearted solidarity, because you know people worked long and hard to get that pole spot.
Yep.
I forget who had the pole spot.
I don't remember who it was, but in order to get the pole spot at a NASCAR event, you actually have to outdrive the other drivers during the qualifying.
You have to have
the fastest time. Fastest time of all the qualifiers gets the pole.
Yeah.
And so they moved Bubba Wallace basically up to the pole position. And he was not in pole position. He didn't have the fastest qualifying time, et cetera. And that's fine. But Chuck, I mean, you know, you would think that, okay, so when the FBI comes out with a report that, no, this is a garage door pull rope, and there are many of them here in the garage area in different stalls,
mm-hmm.
this is not a message. It's not an attack. It's not terrorism or intimidation of a driver. It has nothing to do with that. It was just an honest mistake because of, well, you know, let's grant it, tensions are high right now in this country. People are hypersensitive to many things, and I'm not just talking about blacks, folks. I'm talking about whites, too. Everybody's hypersensitive about stuff, and it might be easy to miscontextualize what you have in front of you if your brain is already there. Okay, I'm sure there's been many times when we have preconceived notions about something, and even though if something happens, it's innocuous, all of a sudden it's become an affront or a problem because of where our headspace is already. I've lived that a few times myself.
Yeah.
I'm right there.
Yeah.
So you would think that after this came out, and everybody, including, you know, from the FBI, multiple agents, to the State Patrol, to NASCAR security, to everybody and the brother who was like combing through this and getting it done, okay, you'd be like, okay, yeah, I didn't, it looked to me like it was a problem, and I made a mistake. If you were Bubba Wallace, you know, no harm, no foul. Is that what Bubba Wallace did?
No.
Oh, no.
Sadly,
what he did was Tuesday night, he trots over to CNN. And he does an interview on CNN where he doubles down on his assertion that this was actually a noose. It was a message against him, and it was showing just how racially, insensitive or racially tinged NASCAR is. Well, okay, I'll give you. NASCAR probably is racially tinged. There haven't been too many black drivers. There haven't been too many, but I mean,
okay.
What's
the origins of NASCAR? The
bootleggers.
Bootleg racing.
Yeah.
And that was not completely, but largely the domain of white white Southerners, not just white Southerners, because I can tell you that there were white Northerners involved, because my dad used to come home every once in a while with a jug of White Lightning.
Yep.
He, you know, he traded it for this or that or another thing. So there were some in Ohio. They're all over the place, obviously. But it's a it was a big deal that it was it started really in the 40s. And these guys would fix up these cars, put heavy suspensions in them, fix up the engines. And the big deal was to see who could get their load of White Lightning past the cops and in into their markets faster, be the fastest at doing that. So then it became a competition thing. Was it racially tinged? I don't see how it couldn't be. Everything was racially tinged, not just in the South. Everywhere in the United States of America in the 1940s. When you got soldiers who were signing up to fight for their country who get stuck, especially in the Navy, being weight personnel in the galleys, you've got a race issue. Why, you know, men weren't allowed to fight. They were allowed to serve tables. That's as about as racist as you can get. So, was it racist? Okay. Yeah, it's, at its start, yes.
Well, okay, you're right, NASCAR. But I want to go into, and I pulled this up from, because Breitbart News has got this up here. They got an article. I want to go through what Bubba Wallace actually said in his interview with Don Lemon. Now, I'm not even going to start down the road on Don Lemon.
But, okay.
But let's just say, so Lemon asked him a question. He says, have you seen ropes like that hanging from garages? Is that fairly typical? And Wallace says, Don, the damage I have of what I've seen of what was hanging in my garage is not a garage pole. Did you know something? He didn't answer the question.
That's right.
He just told you how he felt about it, what his emotional state was. Okay? So he says, I've been racing all my life. We've raced out of hundreds of garages that have never had garage pulls like that. But you are saying that they'd have pulls of various sorts. Because when you phrase it like that, it means, well, not like the way that I interpreted that one to look.
Right.
So here we go. So he says, so people who want to call it a garage pull and put out videos and photos of knots as their evidence, go ahead. But from the evidence that we have, that I have, it's a straight up noose. Well, again, 15 FBI agents and a boatload of other officials from NASCAR reviewed it, and none of them came up to the response that it was a noose. Now, he says this, though. He said, it's a straight-up noose. He says, the FBI has stated it was a noose over and over again. No, media reports about what the FBI stated said noose, because as soon as the word noose was used originally, everybody in the media started using the word noose.
Noose. Yeah.
Nobody said anything about anything else until the report came out. He said, NASCAR leadership has stated that it was a noose. Well, because that's what you told them it was. And so they were basically saying that if it was, then they were going to go after the people who did it. And he says, I can confirm that I actually got evidence of what was hanging in my garage, over my car, around my print crew guys to confirm that it was a noose. Never seen anything like it. I talked to my crew chief about it. I said, is this something like, I wanted to make sure we weren't jumping the gun. And I said, this isn't a knot. This isn't. And he's like, Bubba, this isn't something that can be done within a second of just tying a knot and being on the way. This is something that took time. Okay, so that's his statement.
Yeah.
That because it took time, then it must have been a noose, so, you know, and it was damaging to him. Okay, we'll lay that there. Even though there are some inconsistencies with what he believes is the case and what the report is saying is the case. So Don Lemon comes out. So what are you saying? Are you saying that you believe it was intended for you in that way? Or are you, what are you saying here? Now here's Wallace's response, and I think this is the money note right here, Chuck. It was a noose. Weather tied in 2019, it was a noose. So it wasn't directed at me, but somebody tied a noose. Stop the presses.
Yes,
right,
exactly.
There.
Exactly.
A, you know from your what you know that it was a rope pull that was tied sometime last fall.
So he knew it.
This isn't your personal garage. It's where you're assigned when you come to the racetrack. More than one of those garages had those garage pulls in their stalls. It wasn't directed to you, and it certainly wasn't tied. You know what? You're right. It couldn't have been something somebody could have tied in a couple of seconds. My guess is somebody tied these things to make them for the garages last year, tied them well so that they wouldn't slip, wouldn't cause a problem, wouldn't become ineffectual in doing the job they're supposed to do. So you make them well and then put them in the garages. Bubba Wallace wasn't racing here at this racetrack in 2019.
Right. Here's the problem, Barry. A noose is a slip knot.
Yes, it has to be.
You don't tie a hangman's noose. Most people that, for instance, hang themselves, yeah, don't tie a hangman's noose because they're not expecting to have their neck broken. They're expecting to strangle.
Yeah, they need it to tighten up in order to strangle.
So
yeah,
it's a slip knot.
Yeah.
Do you tie a slip knot in one of these garage door closers?
No, because then it becomes like a little knot ball, and then
your hand gets caught in it. And you know, you're strangling your hand while you're trying to pull the garage door down. You tie a permanent knot in it that's not going to slip.
A bowline or something like that, or some kind of a boat knot. So if something does mess up, you can get it loose, but it's not going to create a slip.
He knows that was there at least since last October.
Right.
In the stall he was in.
But he picked the day before the race to bring it up as an issue.
You know they've been in and out of that garage for
weeks. at least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I think you come in a week or two beforehand to get your cars prepped and to do the qualifiers.
You have to do all the qualifiers. I don't know if they do a truck race there or not.
I don't know if it's at that particular track.
Most NASCARs do that little pickup truck race thing.
Yeah.
Where you come in and you bang around it sounds kind of scary to me. I have a pickup truck. I don't want to drive 150 miles an hour around a track.
Yep.
They're a little light in the back for that, for my taste.
Yeah.
But that being said, he's been in and out of there. He knows. He at least for sure knows now. But he's doubling down. Why? Because he sees the Jesse Smollett face plant coming.
Well, yeah, there's that too. But he also is, I think, seeing that, you know, they got the zeitgeist right now in the culture is we're going to tear down everything because we can use racism as a club to knock it all down with. So I can get an advantage in racing if I just claim racism all the time. There's a problem with that. It's called crying wolf.
Yes.
You can only cry wolf so many times before people start ignoring it. And when they start ignoring it and then the real wolf comes, then you're in trouble. This is the other piece. You know, I talked to you earlier and you talked about the reasons why. Well, here's the other problem with this. Well, first of all, now we're realizing that this is, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt that it was an honest misunderstanding and a miscontextualization.
Yeah.
But now that he's doubling down on it, now it's starting to feel like either he's irrational about the whole thing because he's wanting to go find racism everywhere he looks, or it's an intentional hoax, knowing that he can use embarrassment and intimidation in order to get something that benefits him, which is frankly problematic. And why do we think that? Well, in the last 3 or 4 years, Chuck, there have been a number of noose issues, Jesse Smollett, you talked about.
Yep.
Where obviously, you know, you're obviously Trump supporters with MAGA hats were trying to, you know, string him up with a noose. Oh, wait a minute. That wasn't true.
At 2 a.m., 20 below zero, Chicago.
What's starting to become evident, it might have been one of his homosexual love interests who he hired to pull this thing off because he was about to get axed from the program he was on because they didn't need him anymore. But if he turned himself into a cause celeb, he could renegotiate a contract in order to make more money and stay on the show.
He was trying to renegotiate a contract, and he renegotiated it all right. He renegotiated himself right out of a contract.
Yeah.
Although they did bring him back, of course they did, because you know, they're trying not to hang him out to dry, so to speak, too much. But the fact is, the guy hung himself out to dry. He got caught. Now, you made a statement about looking for a racist, you know, everywhere you can find one.
Right.
I call that Ken Burns syndrome.
Yes.
If you know Ken Burns.
Yes.
Ken Burns used to make really good documentaries. I had one that he did on the Brooklyn Bridge. It was absolutely outstanding. And he did a couple others that were absolutely outstanding. And then when the Civil War came out, Ken Burns' Civil War, that one was also a very good documentary, although it was very much Civil War about slavery, which it was in part. That was certainly one of the major players, but that's not everything it was about. We don't want to go in that. But ever since then, Ken Burns on baseball, Ken Burns on the West, Ken Burns on this and that. It's the never ending search for a racist under every bed. And the reason that he does that is because it brings in money from the PBS crowd.
Yep.
It brings in donations. Ken Burns has become a multimillionaire.
Yep.
By the never ending search for a racist under every bed. Now, is there a racist under every bed? No. Our country tainted with the stain of racism? Absolutely. It is. You can't get away from that. But, you know, this New York Times has the whole 1619 project, which is simply rife with error. They write these things. They get called out for it. They say, well, you're right, but we're not changing it. Now, what they don't tell you is that the first slaves that came to the United States of America weren't black.
No, they were not.
They were white. They were Irish.
Now, I had...
And that came before 1619.
I'm glad you brought this up, Chuck, because we do need to delve into this, because that is starting to come up as people are starting to become more aware. They're starting to come up in social media discussions. Well, I had a social media discussion I was following, I think it was yesterday, as a matter of fact, where, there was a discussion about how racism has been involved, endemic in our culture, and it has been.
I
worked for Ken Blackwell when he ran for governor in 2006.
And I volunteered.
I found out just exactly how pervasive some racism is. And let me tell you something, some of the worst racists I ran into during that campaign were white liberals.
Okay? Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely,
yes.
White liberals who on the face of it are small smiles, but behind your back, they're trying to stab you in the back because they're inherently racist as well. It wasn't the good old boy conservative MAGA hat wearing, whether Confederate or U.S. flag flying, average Joes. There were some of those too.
There were some of those too.
I'm not going to say, I'm not painting too broad of a brush. There were a number of those people as well, but and there were a lot of people who were Republican Party
stalwarts.
I was going to say establishment hacks. Who were just as racist.
And that's
as a matter
what
of fact,
I mean. That's what I mean.
Their
by
racism,
that.
Their yeah. racism ran so badly that they couldn't stand the fact that A, that Ken Blackwell was black, and B, that he was a conservative. And so they ended up forming formal groups supporting Ted Strickland, who was running against him for governor. Now, be that as it may, yes, we have racism in this country. We have it. It's a problem. But when you bringing up this thing with the actual first slaves upon our soil, I had some SJW type who came out and basically said, you can't equate the indentured servitude of people from Eastern Europe and Ireland with the chattel slavery of the blacks. And I'm like, first of all, you're making a category error.
Right.
Not every white person who was brought over here was brought over here as an indentured servant.
No.
Many of them were brought over as slaves, chattel slavery. You also can't say that every black that ever hit these shores out of a boat was a chattel slave. Many of them came over as indentured servants.
Yes.
Because that's how you paid for passage, your fare, your food. You sometimes even your tools and equipment that you would use in order to start a life over here in the colonies. You didn't have that kind of money to drop, no matter what color your skin was, but you oftentimes would go to a company like the East India Company or any of these like colonial companies that had formed, and they would advance you monies and pay for your passage in order to get you over here. But that meant that you had to work it off. You had to basically work for them or provide part of what you were making back and pay in the cut. Chuck, you know what we call that today? We call that having a mortgage.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Taking out a loan. You know, folks, any of you who are sitting out there right now who have a mortgage on your house, who have car payments, who have any sort of bank debt, you're an indentured servant.
Well, think about this.
You're an indentured servant.
When you take on a job.
Yeah.
And this is why we need to rethink the way we do, not the way we do employment, but how we look upon our jobs.
Sure.
Okay? Because
oh, absolutely.
When you go into a business, you basically become a contractor.
True.
You agree for a certain number of hours a day, usually 8.
Yes. Or so many hours in a run of a week.
Yeah. You agree to sell that time to your employer.
For a rate that you both agree to.
That you both agree to. That's an indenture.
It is. Absolutely is.
That is an indenture. And the fact is that you owe your employer the loyalty.
Yep.
The work.
Yes.
Anything that they want you to do within certain bounds, obviously.
True.
You know, they want you to lie, cheat, steal, act with, engage in some kind of moral turpitude.
Leave a limb with them as security. No, yeah, that's the kind of thing you don't.
That is forbidden as a matter of contract. You can't do that. And in fact, the government will say, well, your contract's null and void. No problem. You can leave. But the fact is that you are an indenture to your employer.
Mm-hmm.
You've sold them that time. You owe them the time. You owe them 100% of your effort while you're there. And if they have rules that you have to follow, you can't do this. You can't use your cell phone. You can't do social media while you're at work.
Well, how dare they tell me what I can't do with my time?
That's the problem.
The
tail wants to wag the dog. And in fact, that's not the way this is supposed to work. But let's get back to this indenture idea. Black slaves, when they first came, did come as indentures.
Yep.
They came. Some of them came in chains because they didn't want to go. But they came as indentures. And they said, you work 7 or 14, usually 14, you're free. And they did become free. They became free blacks. And some of them bought slaves. They were successful at what they did. They learned on the job from the things. You know, there were a lot of skilled laborers among the slave class. Blacksmiths. Wheelwrights, carriage makers, that kind of carpenters, that kind of very skilled labor. And they basically had to serve apprenticeships and the whole thing to learn these crafts. This made them actually very valuable. And the problem was that Northerners, they were importing so enough black people, they didn't want them to become free blacks because they would be the white people would be overwhelmed. So they changed the rules of the game. So you no longer were indentured, you were chattel.
Right.
That's how we got from point A to point B.
Yes, it is. And you know, but don't tell that to an SJW because they've got their minds made up that you're wrong. You're engaging in a category error, and how dare you conflate, you know, those two, because obviously if you're white-skinned, you never were a chattel slave.
Ask anybody, read some of the history where people who were chattels attempted to escape their contracts.
Mm-hmm.
They were treated the same way as fugitive slaves were, and in fact were covered under the same laws. You could be beaten, you could be chained up, you could be essentially tortured or killed. And in fact, a lot of chattels were killed, white and black.
Yeah, it's true.
The fact is that a lot of the Irish that came over, the original slaves, were children. Children were purchased because the parents couldn't afford to raise them. There were a number of bad things going on, and so they just were sold. And there was an article I read, I wish I'd kept the reference. I'll have to see if I can find it again. But it talked about the rate of death of indentures, especially children.
It's huge.
75%, 80% died before their indenture was up.
Right. I mean, it was hard work.
And very few of them lived very long after their indenture was over, you know, to especially the little ones, they were doing it. They were doing heavy field work and that kind of thing. People would purchase these children to do the work that they didn't want their own kids to do.
Right.
So they were treating them as essentially subhuman.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is exactly how chattel slavery worked. If you read those who were defending slavery, the way it was done was by maintaining the idea that the slave was somehow, the black slave was somehow inferior. He was not 100% a human being. He was a subhuman.
Right, right. Well, and as you and I had this conversation when we testified on a measure in the legislature, it's that whole idea that the 3/5 clause in the Constitution,
yes,
blacks were only considered 3/5 human, and it's like, well, that's not what that meant.
Yeah.
But you can see where somebody would come up with that kind of thinking, given how an SJW would approach this topic today. But let's peel back a little bit on this, because you've got this situation where, yes, you had indentured servants of all ethnicities come into this continent. You also had chattel slaves of all ethnicities come into this continent. The reason why we focus on black chattel slavery so much, it's a supply and demand issue, Chuck. There was a bigger supply.
Yep.
Why was there a bigger supply, Chuck?
Well, because there were black tribesmen in Africa who liked the cash. They got addicted to the cash and the goods that they could trade for their enemies whom they had captured, or their criminals who didn't want to deal with. Mm-hmm. They just simply chained them up and waited for the next slave ship to show up and sold them.
Well, and see, that happened too in European countries as far as latter part about the criminals, because it was very easy for them to round up criminals on the streets and have ship's captains come and pick out a number of people.
Yeah.
Because they realized that they could, the country didn't want to keep them, or the local constabulary didn't want to keep them around. B, they could get them for next to nothing by giving a little bit of graft to the local constabulary. And C, then ship them off to another part of the world where they had no connections, relations, etc., and then put them into either indentured servitude or chattel slavery.
Can you say Australia?
Well, absolutely. The penal colony. Yes, of course.
It was people were there for forced labor.
We'll talk a little bit more about Australia and how they're a little off here in just a minute. But, getting back to this, in Europe, you didn't have tribal wars. In Europe, you didn't have one group coming after the other group on a regular basis to try to exterminate them. We didn't have genocidal wars in Western Europe around that time frame. Yes, were there wars? Oh, yeah. You had all the wars going on in the Netherlands and other places. But what you had in Africa were tribes that intentionally would raid other tribal groups, steal their people.
Yep.
And then turn around, and especially the ones who were on the coast, sell them off to... Well, it really started with the Dutch. The Dutch were got into the whole idea of making money. What do we call it? They call that the triangle trade.
The triangle trade, yeah.
Because you would go to Africa, or you go to Africa to get slaves. Then you would go to America to sell the slaves off and make money. Then you go down to the Caribbean to buy alcohol and other things to take back to trade with the tribes to get more slaves.
Yeah, the way it worked essentially was a lot of slaves got chewed up in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Because raising sugar
was deeply
labor intensive, yeah, and it was dangerous work, and basically slaves lasted about 18 months.
Yeah.
Before they were worked to death and died. So there was a lot of slaves that came over to the Caribbean. And then basically they were picking up sugarcane and that kind of thing.
And alcohol.
And alcohol. And bringing it to the colonies and trading that for other goods, wood products.
The triangle trade went both directions because it depended on how you wanted to start it. Do you go pick up slaves, then go to the Caribbean, or do you pick up the slaves, go to America to just sell slaves, and then use the proceeds?
But it kept going. Well, what people don't know, too, is that when the first slave ships arrived in the Bay Colony, the Dutch ships were sent away. No slaves were sold, and no, they were not allowed to land.
You're right.
Go to Virginia.
But we don't hear about that. We will not hear about that in the new revised history books.
No.
Because that doesn't fit
the narrative.
The narrative.
Yeah.
The meta-narrative that's being created.
Here's one of the problems that I'm seeing. By the way, I had to laugh when I see these guys in Congress and that kind of Nancy Pelosi wearing a kente cloth. The kente cloth around their necks.
Yep.
In support of Black Lives Matter. Kente cloth was essentially a pattern that was used by the empire that was huge in the slave trade. They were selling slaves in Africa. And that's being admitted by places, but there are excuses being made for that. There's no excuse. You're wearing the clothing of someone who of an area where that was engaged in the slave trade, and that's enough to get your statue torn down. They're tearing down statues of people who were involved in the fight against slavery. They really don't care, and that's because there's an ulterior motive. I'm not going to go into that right now. But Barry, I was walking back in the woods with my neighbor the other day. We were looking at trees and that kind of thing.
Okay, yeah.
And I noticed there was this big, beautiful cherry tree, probably about 70 feet tall, straight, beautiful. You don't see them around here that often. The cherry trees will twist and they get get really tall. But this tree looked perfect. But guess what? It was snapped off at about 4 feet above the base.
Ooh, that's a shame.
Now, why was it snapped off? It looked structurally sound. It really did. I looked all over the place, and then when I got in and looked at the crack where the tree was bent over, it was eaten up with carpenter ants.
Mm-hmm.
Carpenter ants had found a flaw.
And exploited it.
And took this big, beautiful tree that looked perfectly sound. It looked beautiful. It looked like it was had all its integrity. And it snapped it off at the base. First strong wind that came along, gone. That's what we're dealing with here. We look strong. We're eaten alive from the inside.
Yep. You're right.
Because, and the metaphor is, we no longer can critically think. When this guy, Bubba Wallace, the first thing that should have happened was somebody should have said, wait a minute. Let's not jump to anything before the investigation's done. There's something wrong with this story. Now, when I first heard it, the only detail I heard mm-hmm. was there was a noose. I assumed it was like where he would be sure to see it, like hanging from his mirror or something.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I hope they burn whoever did this down. Guess what? It turns out to be fake.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me the question, how'd they get in there with all those cameras? And I'm like, that's a restricted area, and it is highly surveilled.
Oh, it has to be.
There is no way to sneak in. Unless you're – the only way to do it is if you're involved in the surveillance team.
Right.
And you disable the camera.
You do it yourself, yeah.
Yeah. Or as we do in here in my office, when we sleep in here, I put a bag over the camera so people can't see us, you know, getting into our night clothes. If I accidentally, I've got a motion recorder, so I really don't want that on my camera system. But the fact is that, you know, the FBI looked at it, the Alabama Bureau of Investigation, their state police.
Yep.
All the people that looked at it, the security people, they looked at those films. They knew right off that thing was there all the time. They knew it.
Yeah, they had to.
So where was the critical thinking? critical thinking's out the door, especially when you have an agenda. When you're CNN...
Or you're driving on pure emotion.
Yes. When you're CNN, when you're ABC, when you're CBS, when you're PBS, when you're NBC, when you're the New York Times...
NPR, yeah.
NPR. Name. Even Fox News fell into the trap and nobody thought through it. Although there are people now who are saying, behind the scenes, told you so...
Well, again,
and I saw it from people who were bloggers saying, "Warned you."
Yeah, you know, and there were people who like said this doesn't pass the sniff test immediately.
Immediately.
I mean, I wasn't necessarily among them, but I also because again, you know, the framing was good. NASCAR, Talladega, Alabama, black driver. Southern white sport, basically, which is most people's assumption. You know, it all had the ring of truth to it, Chuck. But that's a problem. If you sell a lie long enough, loud enough, and repeated enough, it sometimes gets the ring of truth, but it's a hollow ring because it's not true.
Which is why Bubba Wallace is on with Don Lemon saying, yeah, well, it's a noose, but it wasn't necessarily for me,
it was a noose. And it's like, okay, that's a matter of personal viewpoint and opinion of what you believe you think something is and
yes.
what it actually is used for and intended for. But that's one of our big problems in this culture, Chuck. Is that we have lost the ability to think, to step outside of the situation. And I'm not necessarily just saying Bubba Wallace or
blacks or anything else.
I'm just saying all of us have the disability of not being able to step outside the situation and look at it objectively most of the time. We have been trained as a culture to internalize and have everything that doesn't fit our preconceived notions be an attack on our self-image. Look at our culture.
Yeah.
Look at everything in it. We've driven the self-esteem movement into the ground through schools, you know? We have created this whole idea. You know, look at our advertising. You know, Nike, just do it, you know? What was the Wendy's one or McDonald's, you know, have it your way, Burger King.
Yes.
You know, hey, folks, these are things that have been going on in our culture for a long, long, long time where we have driven that the individual is more important. The individual is everything. Well, yeah, let's even go back to Teddy Roosevelt, whose statues they're taking down,
in
the Museum of Natural History in New York. Rugged individualism has been a idea of our culture for a long time. Chuck, really the outpouring of what's going on right now with the, whether you want to call them protests or riots, I'm not going to call them protests because they've gone beyond that in our cities and other areas, is really a function of groups of people who want to be ruggedly individualistic, which means that they want to use force, threat, and intimidation to get what they want. And I'm just going to put it this way as a Christian. You're going to hear from a lot of people how Christians, especially, and I know Dan Cathy from Chick-fil-A,
oh my gosh, yes.
and others who are going out there and doing the mea culpas and the, you know, moaning and groaning about everything and being extra biblical about it. Let's go back to what the Bible actually does say, shall we?
Yeah.
Because there is a passage and a verse that we all should be paying deep and close attention to. I don't care what your ethnicity is. I don't care what your socioeconomic background is. I really don't care who your mom and your daddy were. Okay? I don't care what your traditions are. I don't care that's just the way we've always done things. Because it's not the way it is. I'm going to go to Acts 17. Starting in verse 24.
Okay.
It is written, starting in verse 24, God that made the world and all things that are therein. Okay, so we got the first premise right there that God made us. Period. And we know if we go back to Genesis that we know he made us in his image after his likeness, their likeness, the triumvirate God.
Right.
You know, the Trinity. Seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, Okay, that's the second premise. We're answerable to him. He's our Lord. Dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. Well, there's our third premise, is that God gives us everything. We don't come at it on our own. Our rugged individualism didn't get us where we are. It didn't get us to what we needed to do. God has given us these things. Now, God also allows us, sadly for us, to eat the fruit of our own sin and corruption and rebellion as well. And we see that in our culture sometimes, because sometimes it magnifies. But here is what the kicker is, and I'm going to read a few more verses, but here's the one I want you to really dwell in on. If you're a Christian, this should be one of the key, you know, and I don't mean to like script a torture or to create this verse is more important than any other verse in the Bible, because they're all important. They're all God's word. They're all directions to us. But here's the one in today's culture and right now in this environment we need to remember. Now, this is that God who has made us, who is our Lord, and who has given all life and breath and all things. So our three premises. Here's the kicker. And he has made of one blood all mankind to dwell on all the face of the earth, and hath assigned the seasons which were ordained before in the bounds of their habitations, that they should seek the Lord. If so be they might have groped after him and found him through, though doubtless he be not far from every one of us. We're made of one blood. Folks, this whole thing about division and skin color and everything else are false narratives. As Christians, we ought to know better. Because first of all, we believe that there was an original pair, Adam and Eve, who were created directly by God, who then birthed the entire human race. And if you have a difficulty with that about who's who and who's what, God wiped out the majority of the human race for our sin, our rebellion, and the consequences of our corruption, except for Noah and his family. And the rest of our human existence came from Noah and his family. After the first time, God wiped out pretty much everybody except for 8 people on the face of the planet. Now we're here at a crossroads, and we're forgetting the fact that it isn't about ethnicities. It isn't about where you're from. It isn't about what language you speak. Because, well, remember the Tower of Babel and another one of these Genesis narratives.
Yep.
That God confused the languages for a certain reason, because people were getting too ruggedly individualistic and thought they were better than God, and they figured if they come together, they could build a tower up there where they could dethrone God. You know, that was the big goal for the Tower of Babel, was to build it high enough to put a throne up there that they could be on an equal level with the God that they believed at that point. So here we go. So basically, and God's not far from everyone. So whether you're a BLM protester, an Antifa member, a white conservative Republican legislator, a housekeeper, a farmer, I don't care who you are, what you are, what your vocation is, your ethnicity or whatever, God is not far from every one of us. He's created us. He's created all things. He's given us life. He's put his image in us. And he's expecting something out of us. And verse 28, where I'm at, says, "For in him we live and move and have our being." Sorry. "As also certain of your own poets have said, for we are also his generation." Now, this is Paul talking to the Greeks.
Right.
On Mars Hill.
Mars Hill.
This is the Mars Hill soliloquy. "For we are also his generation. For as much then as we are the generation of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like unto gold or silver or stone graven by art and the invention of man. In the time of this ignorance, God regarded not. But now he admonishes all men, not those who are just have white skin, not those who just have black skin, not those who just have red skin, have yellow skin, whatever color, all men everywhere." Doesn't matter if you're in the cities, the countries, you're in America, you're in Europe, whatever, "to repent, because he has appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he hath appointed, that's Christ, whereof he hath given an assurance to all men, in that he hath raised him, Christ, from the dead. That's the message. So we can talk about all the things we want to talk about, but until we all bow the knee before God and we all repent of either considering ourselves to be as God and putting ourselves over other people, or considering that God made an error because he created us differently. You know, one has black skin, one has white skin. And that somehow that it's our skin color that equates our value, our worth, our humanity, and not God, who is ever near us and with us. And we are all in his image. We got to get to that.
Yeah.
Because all the rest of this stuff is just Satan seeking to drive division.
I'm going to make an unsolicited and uncompensated promotion here.
Go ahead and plug away.
I'm a big fan of the Ark Encounter.
Yeah, that's a great place.
The Ark Encounter. And if you want to understand what we're saying about one blood, and please go to the Ark Encounter or the Creation Museum, either one. But get online on YouTube and look up Answers in Genesis. You don't necessarily have to agree with all their viewpoints on everything, because we find that that's exceedingly rare. In fact, if you listen to those guys on there, they'll tell you that they have differences on certain how to interpret certain parts of Scripture and how it applies to science and that kind of thing. But one of the big things that Ken Hannum has done, he did a lecture series called One Blood. And I think they did a conference called One Blood. You can get that for free on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, if that's the case, then we should probably link it in our, we should probably link that in the feed that we're going to have off this on our website at principledpolicy.com.
Yeah. Because what you just stated, now, we have a problem in the church right now in that people are saying it's important, more important to unite around race relations, and not just race relations, but how we get there. In other words, it's more important to pay homage to certain races because they've been mistreated in the past than it is to unite around Christ.
That is a category error of the worst sort.
It's not just a category error. It's a blasphemy.
And heresy.
And a heresy.
Yeah.
Because what you're basically saying is that there is a racial hierarchy. We've just got it reversed. No, there is no racial hierarchy.
Well, no, there is a hierarchy that we've reversed. We put ourselves above God.
Listen.
That's what I was talking about there. He is Lord. He created us. We are made in his image, not the other way around.
We've only got 2 minutes left, but I don't know if you caught it or not, but you know who Sean King is, obviously.
Yes.
Sean King. We joke around here, Talcum X.
He's one of the founders of BLM, or one of the big spokespersons.
He's a white race baiter who basically faked people into believing he was black for years.
Mm-hmm, right.
And it turns out he's as white as Barry.
He's Caucasian.
He's Caucasian. He has come out and said that the images of Jesus are going to have to be destroyed because they're racist at their core. Now, I've had problem for years with I always call him the Swedish Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
Blonde hair, blue eyes,
Well, even the brown hair, blue eye one is a problem. Yeah.
It's possible that Christ had blue eyes, because if you read descriptions in the Bible, there were people with lighter skin and for instance, red hair. David was redhead. There were other redheads in the Bible. It can't happen.
Who were part of Christ's lineage.
Christ's lineage. So, but I'm not discounting that, but I'm also not coming out unequivocally and saying he had blue eyes. No, I don't know if he did or not. If you ask me, he was probably a very short, little curly-haired, brown-haired Jewish man who looked exceedingly unremarkable, which is what the Bible says. He was exceedingly unremarkable because they didn't want people to follow him because he was pretty.
Yeah, he wasn't going to be a charismatic leader like, say, Saul.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that being said, that's the kind of nonsense that is coming out. And there are people in the church who agree with Sean King.
That's scary.
That's frightening. Well, that being said, we're out of time.
Of course we are.
Of course we are. We could go on for another hour easily. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.